Last night I watched a movie called Rogue from 2007, I think. This movie, as the opening credits inform the viewer, is written, produced, and directed by Greg McLean, who also made Wolf Creek. Now, just to compare the two for a second, this movie, Rogue, I enjoyed. To me, like, it's my favorite thing that Greg McLean has ever done. And Wolf Creek kind of got all the attention. And then Rogue, I think people didn't really know what to make of it at the time. Some people loved it. I think they have since made a Rogue 2 that maybe went straight to DVD. Maybe Greg McLean even made it. I'm not really sure. But I think it's gained some notoriety in the years since it's release, but I was always intrigued by it. I wasn't able to see it. I don't remember it playing anywhere around me theatrically. Wolf Creek was kind of a thing, and Rogue never really became a thing. Like, Wolf Creek was a movie that people saw, people talked about. Now, ironically, Rogue to me is a lot more fun and actually crowd pleasing than Wolf Creek. Wolf Creek is very dark. It's this kind of like descent into hell, whereas Rogue to me is a fun alligator picture. Now, something that I thought was interesting is they're kind of the same movie structurally, the way they're set up. Rogue is very much a horror movie in terms of the way it's set up, which I wasn't expecting. I don't know what I was expecting. It was something more like, I don't know. Maybe more like an action movie. I'm not really sure. I think I was probably picturing Alligator, which is a movie I love, and I'm sure was some sort of influence on Rogue, but they're very different movies. Rogue takes place, I guess, in Australia somewhere, I guess, maybe in the outback. And it takes place on this river, and it is this sort of like Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now, like this journey down the river. And of course, I fell asleep. I never got to the good part. I was pretty stoned. But the movie opens with a crocodile attack. A crocodile eats like a bison thing, and I thought it was real at first, but I don't think they really did it, or really filmed one of those attacks. So then the credits roll. A group of tourists board a tour boat. They're going to go down the river. Radha Mitchell, I think that's how you say her name, is the tour guide. Along the way, they run into Sam Worthington, known now for Avatar. I guess he's Australian. I mean, his accent sounded authentic, as did hers. And they kind of chat for a second, and then she moves on. To me, this is also sort of part of the Jaws ripoff subgenre of horror, which I would also place Alexander Asia's Piranha remake in that genre. So to me, it was kind of cool. I had this thought, actually, I think it was during that scene, that both Greg McLean and Alexander Asia had their chance to make their Jaws ripoff, their Jaws movie. And both around the same time. Piranha was a few years later. And it's sort of interesting that the original Piranha, Joe Dante's Piranha, written by John Sayles, who also wrote Alligator, was like an official entry in that genre, and many many considered to be the best entry in that genre, the Jaws ripoff subgenre. To me, Orca is the best. That's my favorite. But yeah, the Joe Dante was doing his Jaws ripoff, which Alexander Asia later remade and was kind of able to do his Jaws ripoff with. I just thought that was sort of interesting. So that's Rogue. I've also been digging on Existenz, the David Cronenberg movie, which is my favorite David Cronenberg movie of the 90s, which I know is a bold statement. I love Naked Lunch. Crash is great. Perhaps his greatest achievement of the 90s. To me, Crash is overly sexualized. There's too much sex and not enough car fetishism, fetishists, weirdness. I mean, I don't know. You could argue a lot of different ways. And I do need to see it again. I saw it years ago, actually, at the Metrograph in Manhattan, lower Manhattan. I was living in Brooklyn at the time, and I ventured over the bridge to the Metrograph, and it's still the only movie I've seen at that theater. And they were showing it on 35, and it's great. I mean, it's an amazing movie. Some hipsters were making comments afterwards, which is fine. The same thing actually happened at Crimes of the Future, which I was also thinking about while watching Existenz. I was up early this morning and I put it on, because I had been watching it, but I fell asleep. But then somehow I had paused it where I fell asleep, so I don't even remember doing that. But I started it up again, and then I thought, you know what, this is just too gross for the morning. So then I put on Rick and Morty, which is also gross, but I watched the season 6 premiere, perhaps the best season premiere of all 6 seasons, debatably. Yeah, it was really good. So that was my morning. So I'm off today, tomorrow from work. I'll do some writing. And that's pretty much it. It's kind of a cloudy, overcast, gloomy day. But no rain so far. Had a thunderstorm last night. Anyway, this is getting boring. I'm Maxwell Haddad, and you're listening to Video Nasties. Last night I watched Silence, the Martin Scorsese movie that I have already previously covered on this podcast. I watched it. I didn't even get to the part that I was at. I mean, I think I was an hour, maybe even like an hour and a half in. It's a long fucking movie. I think it's like 2.5 hours. So, I mean, that's not that long, but it feels epic. I don't know if it's over long. I haven't even gotten to the fucking end yet, but it's just great. I mean, I think I definitely loved it even more the second time. It's got this real tone to it that's almost kind of like zen. It's kind of like very... And Andrew Garfield's narration helps to contribute to this. It's very kind of like calm and peaceful. And not a lot of action. Sort of uneventful. But then things do happen anyway. But then there is torture involved. So, yeah, this is a movie about the Portuguese monks who went to Japan, specifically Nagasaki, I guess to attempt to convert them or something. I don't know. They were talking about a little bit on the new Red Scare episode yesterday, and I was listening to it. They mentioned Silence. I remembered that it's available on Canopy, which I can now stream again, so I just said, fuck it. I'm going in. Going back in. And it is my favorite Scorsese movie of the last 20 years or so. I'm trying to think. I mean, I did love The Irishman, so there is that. But I'm trying to think, like, before Silence, what would be the one? I'm trying to think. I mean, maybe since Goodfellas, even. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of Scorsese in the 2000s. I don't really like The Aviator. I mean, I like some things about it, but I'm not a big Aviator fan. I'm not even a big Departed fan, even though I do like that movie, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate what it was at that moment. I mean, I saw it in a theater, and the ending was, like, truly shocking. And you could feel that in the theater. I mean, I was there. It was a packed house. You know, this is 2006. Could have been early 2007, actually, by the time I saw it, and it was, like, still in theaters. But, anyway, I don't know where the fuck I was going with any of this. I've been obsessed with Suckin' and See by Arctic Monkeys. I don't know why. It's, like, the one Arctic Monkeys album that maybe I hadn't ever even heard in its entirety. Or at least I'd never, like, delved into. So I've been delving into it. Favorite track right now. I can't pick just one. I really like That's Where You're Wrong, the last track. I also really like the riff on All My Own Stunts, which to me is the most Nirvana riff and the most Nirvana-esque song on the album. I think it's interesting that Alex Turner kind of like, well, first of all, I don't know, I was thinking about it, and this is probably unfair, but it's just like the first Arctic Monkeys album that's like fully written and like fully, like every song is like a real song from start to finish. Like, it's when Alex Turner fully got into like real songwriting. Like before, with the early stuff, he was writing these kind of like jagged, sort of weird, to use the dreaded term, postmodern songs that were like just distinctly Arctic Monkeys. Like they had their own sound. And then, starting with Humbug, I would say specifically a Cornerstone, he started to write like real, like pretty songs and music, and that they fully embraced that on Suck It and See. It's from 2011. It's a new decade. It's their second decade as a band, and they're moving in a new direction. And that album, it now sounds like a breath of fresh air. I mean, it sounds better than ever. Similar to AM. I didn't appreciate either of them at the time, but they both sound amazing now. I particularly like Suck It and See, even though AM's the more popular one. That's the most popular Arctic Monkeys album is AM. That's like their true pop album. But yeah, I think lyrically, he kind of, Alex Turner shifted in a more abstract direction. He was writing these kind of like stream of consciousness, almost at times like journalistic songs, lyrics, early on, with the Monkees. And by the time I got to Suck It and See, things were getting sort of like abstract. You look at a song like Library Pictures. Here are the opening lyrics of that song. Library pictures of the quickening canoe, the first one of its kind to get to the moon. I think those are the words. So you can see there, I mean, that's probably the most abstract song lyrically that the Monkees had done up to that point. Sort of like, what the fuck does that mean? And he kind of like perfected this sort of weird science fiction lyrical direction that they were going in. He perfected it later. He was still working on it, I think, on AM, and then he perfected it, I think, on Tranquility Base, and then The Car is still this kind of abstract lyricism, which I love. It's poetic, and it is surreal, or at least it's a bit surreal, and I really love that about it. I think it's interesting. It's an interesting direction. Suck It and See is the Arctic Monkeys' most Beatles-esque album. To me, it's their most British album. It's the one that sounds most like British Invasion and even Britpop bands. They started to really kind of write catchy pop music, and I mean all of this complimentary, really. I don't have anything too negative to say about it. I mean, early Arctic Monkeys will always be my favorite, and then I like where they went with Tranquility Base and the Car even better than this middle period, but I'm really starting to appreciate it. I never really appreciated the middle period. Early 2010s, represented by Suck It and See and AM. And now, just to kind of like reinforce what I'm talking about, I want to read to you the Apple Music description, which I haven't even read myself except the very beginning. All right, so this is from Apple Music. I'm using the streaming app. I don't even know if it's technically an app. Anyway, Suck It and See. Quote, after rolling around in the desert rock sludge of Humbug, the British rockers button up their suits for a slightly more refined guitar pop sound on their fourth album. The beats have mostly softened and slowed to mid-tempo grooves, enriched by chiming guitar and polished with a vintage mid-century sheen on pop gems, She's Thunderstorms, and the Hellcat-spangled Sha-La-La-La. But the band's wild side slips out on Brick by Brick, which moves frantically over chunky bass and stormy riffs, nearly fast enough to keep up with Alex Turner's wordy witticisms, unquote. All right, so that's not bad. I think the lyrics got a little bit psychedelic at this point. I think they were moving kind of towards the 60s, sort of like from Humbug on. And that changed a little bit later. I think it's interesting that they called Humbug desert rock. I kind of forgot about it. Desert rock sludge. I kind of like that. And this is a bit more buttoned up, a bit more refined. It is their most guitar album since the first, or maybe the second album. This has my favorite riffs, guitar and bass riffs, maybe of any of their albums, just in terms of, like, pure riffage. It's kind of their most punk, in a way, even though it simultaneously is, it is more refined than their earlier stuff. I don't know, it's kind of, a bit of both, I guess. Anyway, so that's Suck It and See. Yeah, I mean, they did chill out on this album, starting with Humbug. The tempos did slow, and the songs did get less intense. Some of Humbug's not like that, but they did. That was the first time that the Arctic Monkeys started to chill out, and that chilling out continued on this album, even though it does get a little bit, a little chunky, a little heavy at times. Which I like, but it is a transitional period. And now you have something like The Car by Arctic Monkeys, which is just, like, totally chill. Like, they just kind of continue to get more and more chill with each album. And I think Tranquility Base is, like, totally indicative of this based on the title. Like, it's, they're literally saying that this is, tranquil music, and they kind of move towards some loungy stuff on this album a little bit. What's the one I'm thinking of? Oh, The Hellcat Spangled, yeah. Sha-la-la-la. There's a little bit of that on in that song. A little bit of chill lounge music. Anyway, I think that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. I'll be back, not tomorrow, but the day after, for more Video Nasties. I'm Maxwell Haddad. See you at the movies.
This has been a production of Reptilian.